And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to The Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Joining me tonight is my good friend Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well. This is the last week without any bye weeks for many teams, and I think
God.
everybody made sure to get our money's worth with a full slate of games, even starting at 6 a.m. to now here we are, what is it, 1 a.m. East Coast time recording this. What a day.
It's midnight my time. I've been watching football since about 8:30. One of my best friends ran the Chicago Marathon this morning, so I watched her run the marathon in okay. two different going back and forths in Old Town, and then was watching football between that. So it's been 15 hours of football, and it's not been a chill 15 hours of football. Nope. The first window of games was absolutely batshit crazy. Everything that happened down the stretch there, I couldn't figure out how the Packers had gotten the ball back at one point. I didn't know how the Vikings got all the way down there. I watched 0 seconds of Vikings-Lions before the last field goal. So if either the worst game or the best game in NFL history had just happened. We're going to get into everything that happened. Let's start with just a very strange Sunday night game. Obviously, we don't have many weather-delayed Sunday night games between yes. two of probably the best three or four teams in the entire NFL. That's why we're starting so late. But weather aside, whatever the delay looked like, what a game by the Bills.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
this is... to me, just a statement about what they are as a complete team. You know, we've had that as kind of a hypothesis coming in, right? The defense was playing so well. Were they for real based on their competition? And if the defense was that good, combined with what they could still do on offense, what could this look like as a complete team? And I think we kind of got the answer tonight.
Yeah, we've kept tabs on the Bills like throughout this whole year. Obviously, week one with the Steelers wonky game, and then after that, the wonky Dolphins game where, you know, they blew them out, but it was like it wasn't a huge offensive performance from the Bills. And, you know, just keep tabs on them. We break down their defense for the Friday show, and it was like how the defense played. This is how they played the whole year, but it was like they just went against a much better quarterback and a much better team. But this is what they've been doing all year. They just play really smart, really sound. They don't beat themselves up. And if the defense is doing that, and we haven't even talked about the quarterback who only threw, I think he only had 15 completions for over 300 yards. Just like a service academy quarterback, like just 20 yards per completion, just launching them away. But that's, I mean, it was a complete team. That's what they've kind of have shown more this year, that if the offense struggles or doesn't look, it can look disjointed at times, maybe when it's just like, hey, Josh Allen, go do something. Cause I mean, look at the run game tonight. It was like, hey, let's have Josh throw the ball and let's have Josh run the ball.
Did you like how they unleashed that tonight? I mean, that counter bash play they ran in the red zone, it's just straight out of the Ravens playbook. I've never seen them do that before. Yep. And doing that in the red zone makes total sense. I was talking to somebody there when I was in for camp, and I was asking them, I was like, do you feel like you didn't run the ball enough or well enough last year? And the response was, we didn't run the ball well enough in the red zone. And to me, one of the solutions to that possibly was getting Josh more involved in that area of the field. Yeah. And you saw that today. I mean, they yeah. feel totally comfortable, even if he's a $50 million a year man now, using him as a battering ram down there, which I think is sound strategy if yeah. you need to run the ball better in the red zone. That's where it's more important to flip the math. We've seen what running quarterbacks do down there. they did that in specific situations tonight, combined with him just firing lasers 50 yards down the field because Daniel Sorensen can't get back into the deep half fast enough. So the offense, I think, pretty much what we expect, right? I mean, yeah. They can make big plays down the field. I thought that they took advantage of some of those late disguises from the Chiefs. They were not ready to kind of account for them being able to push the ball down the field in some of those situations. Sorensen just left Dawson Knox on that one touchdown.
Everything was going swimmingly, and he was just like, ah.
The Chiefs defense is a problem for another day. It's going to continue to be a problem, I think. I want to talk about the Bills defense, though, because coming into this game on Friday, I posited that I thought this is how they'd play. We're rushing four. We're not blitzing. We're playing coverage behind it. And that's what they did. They didn't blitz one time. They blitzed zero times in the entire game.
Is that what
game.
It was? I was going to ask because I could not recall a single one off the top of my head.
Wow. And remember on Friday, we were talking about how even though when they play zone defense, it's not passive.
Yeah.
And they played a ton of too high today, which is not surprising against the Chiefs. But look at what they were doing underneath. That clip they showed right after halftime, just beating the shit out of Travis Kelce. Yeah. And that's why I liked what they decided to do. It's like, we're going to play passive on the back end in the sense that you're not going to beat us over the top. But underneath, we're going to get up there. We're going to be playing physical. We're going to be right up in your face the entire game. I thought it was a great game plan. And I thought that their front took over in the way that we thought they might when they rebuilt that entire unit this offseason. I thought that some of the holes of the Chiefs' offensive line when they're forced to drop back showed up for the first time. Orlando Brown coming into that type of offense, I think people had some apprehension about what he would look like when he was put into this system. That showed up a few different times. Mm-hmm. It was just a complete win. I mean, I couldn't really be more impressed with what the Bills did and what their plan was.
Yeah, the soft coverage, like, it's kind of funny. That's what's befuddled Josh Allen a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. And then it's like they're like, hey, let's do that against them. Let's do it against the Chiefs. And I mean, that's what we talked about on Friday was like, I cracked the joke, but I'm dead serious. It's so frustrating when you know what the defense is going to be in and you like, I know how to beat this and you still can't because the other unit's so well coached and they're just, it's a different type of swarming to the ball. Like they sprinkled in a couple snaps of man coverage, especially on third down tonight. And it was kind of cool to see a team do that to the Chiefs and go like, we're going to run man against you and we're not scared. And that's why Mahomes had so many scrambles tonight because guys weren't getting open.
Yeah.
Because those Bills defenders were just beating the crap out of the Chiefs. Like, that's just what just kept happening. And just seeing that kind of like unfold throughout the night and seeing a defense consistently do it throughout the night. And, you know, Chiefs got some good drives and then shot themselves in the foot. But that's the game plan that the Bills had was they were going, you can't nickel and dime us the entire way. You're going to get bored. One of our guys, these nine D linemen that we're rotating in is going to get a hand on the ball. One of the guys is going to squeeze a tight throw that you try to throw in there. Tyreek Hill is going to drop a ball. Like, you're going to make a mistake. And that's what they bet. And they won. And like tip your hats to him. I mean, it was like, you've already mentioned right before, but it's just like, this was a total team win. It was like really, really good win in unusual circumstances too, with the rain delay and all that stuff. And yeah, like, way to go, Buffalo Bills. I mean, really, it was just a good performance.
We were talking on Friday about how this is the type of defense where it's a Milano game or it's a Rousseau game or it was an everybody game.
Yeah.
Everybody had one or two plays that they made. You know, Hyde had the pick six touchdown. Even if that ball hadn't been dropped, he was ready to stuff Hill right two yards short of the sticks. That's a play where you deserve that play because you're in the right spot. I think that was, they're playing cover one. He was playing in that robber spot. Yep. And like what we've been talking about so often is that those safeties playing robber on in man coverage and just being there to kind of make plays and passing things off. He was right there in the right spot. Yep. You had Rousseau had the big play with the tip. You had Addison had a couple really nice plays off the edge. Everybody contributed. And I think that was encouraging. I mean, that's exactly what you'd hope for when you build a roster like this and when you fancy yourself a true title contender. And I think that's exactly what they said tonight. It's like, we're here. We are here, and I hope you guys understand that.
If you're going to make your defense and people go, oh, the Bills just have no stars on their defense at end, but it's like, well, they have a lot of good players. And it's like that, if you play like that, when all the good players, it's, like you said, just taking turns making a good play, that helps. Because then it's like when someone has a down game, hey, we got 10 other rotational guys that are going to like pick up the slack. Oh, and just speaks to what they built over there. And you know, we just real quick on the offense, it's like, it's kind of, a little bit of it is what I've knocked, you know, what the Cardinals have done a little bit, where it's like they put a lot on the quarterback to do stuff, but it's screw it. If you have a guy that's making plays like he is right now and just
his eyes are still good. It's like, it's not like chaotic in a sense. His brain's not chaotic, but maybe the play ends up being chaotic. But it was just that the fact that they're able to do that and not take the shots, like when he's running the ball, Josh Allen doesn't really get smoked all the time because he's hurdling some guys, but also like,
or he's running them over
or running them over. Yeah. Like I know, like Culpepper style. I know. And then like, and then he slides. I've never seen a guy get more yards on a slide. I know it was rainy today.
It was like but a slip and slide tonight. He was just going full speed at it. It was great.
When a big guy can run that fast, they're going to,
just a big kid having fun out there, man. Just a big kid really having fun out there. That's all he's doing. So speaking awesome. Of chaotic, let's get to Chargers Browns.
Let's do it.
This game, I tweeted this when it was happening. This game was if football Twitter became self-aware. Like it developed a consciousness and became sentient in the middle of the game. It was incredible. It was. I want to start with the decisions that Brandon Staley made because it was nuts. Yeah. I mean, think about it in an NFL game 5 years ago. If you had a coach going for it on 4th-and-2 from his own 24-yard line in the third quarter, and it's why they won the game.
Yeah,
they went for it on 4th-and-2. They went for it on 4th-and-8. They went for it on 4th-and-7, and they continued to get it. If they don't do every single one of those, they lose this game.
Yep.
And I it's so cool to see somebody rewarded for these types of decisions. And this is a great – I mean, this one of the things that I noticed during this game or thought about, which is not a novel thought, there were a lot of good players in the field. Just, I kept thinking that. I was like, holy shit, just the amount of guys making plays. But when you have a team with this type of talent, with this type of quarterback, and you have a coach that's going to give them every single opportunity to win the game for them, that's what you saw. I mean, they should not have won that game, but they took advantage and squeezed every drop out of every single chance that they were given.
Like Herbert is like the loaded gun. And like what that is with when Staley's going for it on fourth down and the whole offense is like, no one hesitates on the whole team because you know, it's like, you know, he communicates it. The whole team knows, hey, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to be aggressive. But Herbert's the loaded gun. They're just like giving them the poison coated bullets. Like that's what all it is. It just makes it more, it just makes it more devastating. It's like, okay, that 5 yard gain now is, oh, that's more backbreaking. It's just like everything hurts more that they're doing. It's like just an added effect that this does. Can you imagine there's 6 fourth down attempts? I think like before even like it was near the end game situation, like by both teams total, like that is just like, where are we in 2021? This is awesome. Like we're just getting more ball plays and just like more fun plays. Like that's just the bonus of all this. And like Herbert is just absolutely insane on those 3rd and 4th downs. So why wouldn't you? Like if he's the deep touchdown to Mike Williams, it was Sale. We've talked about that the Chargers run Sale. Everybody runs Sale. And we talked about last year on one of the podcasts, we made a joke about like how the alert is really the number one, but no one really throws the alert. Justin Herbert threw the alert on Sale. Like he didn't, he could have thrown the Sale route. It would have been a 1st down on 3rd.
Explain
and
10. What that means. Explain okay, what the construction of the play looks like.
Yeah. A Sale concept is an alert is a post or a go, like just depending on what the defense looks, but a deeper route to take the top off. When you hear the term, take the top off, that's what that is. Sale is like a flattened corner from the slot or from the inside somewhere. And you can switch it up and everything. And then usually there's a 3rd level to it, where there's a flat route or a crosser coming from the other side. So you're making kind of a 3-level read. And for when you're taught these concepts, like if I'm teaching this to a freshman quarterback, I'm going to go, hey, that's the alert. You peek it. If it looks wide open, you chuck it, but you're going high.
The deep
one. The post. That's the alert. That's alert is number one, but it's the alert because then it's the coaches are able to talk out both sides of their mouth. They go, well, that's not number one if you do throw it and it's not open. And if you don't throw it, you go, hey, remember the alert's number one, right? But it's the alert. You got to alert it. But you go from the post, which is the alert, and then one's the sail route, which is the flattened corner, and then check it down to the flat or you work the backside dig. Most quarterbacks would throw the sail route because it was open on that 3rd and 10. That's taking the double. That's great. Good. Wait, happy. That's a B+, A-. Herbert just went, nah, screw it. I'm throwing the post on 3rd and 10, throwing the alert, taking the top off. And it's like, but that's the if you want to beat these defenses, and we could talk about it, what these defenses are doing to these quarterbacks and trying to limit big plays and make you work for it. That's how you don't let them play top down, is by literally taking the top off, taking the post route, even to a Mike Williams who isn't a burner, but you're just making defenses honest. And that's what Justin Herbert does on 3rd and 4th down, just over and over and over. He takes home runs instead of doubles, instead of singles. Like it's creating yards and creating points. And then if you have a play caller or decision maker going like, hey, you guys got all 4 downs, makes those third downs even more weaponized, because now you can, the whole field, you don't have to just throw it past the sticks. You can check it down and make it fourth and four. Just good stuff. It's all, it's good team play. And it's just aggression being rewarded, which is awesome.
And then I think he hit the other long touchdown to Williams was another post dig combination, I want to say, against quarters on first down. They had a lot of quarters beaters on first down. And when you're throwing that post, there was a miscommunication. Delpit just like short circuited. I don't know what he was looking at.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what he was looking at, because there was no one there. And he just almost short circuited. And then you had Williams coming behind it. The thing that I've noticed about Herbert that I find so interesting, because remember coming into the season, there's so much talk about, is he going to regress against pressure on third down? And I kind of think that he's just built for those moments. I almost think he's kind of regression proof. And this is why I say this. It jumped out to me on the Parham touchdown that he threw today. I can't remember what down it was on. But Parham chips a little bit and then releases late. And Herbert, and there's a free rusher because the edge is coming off after Parham lets him go. And the way that Herbert creates space for himself by being able to back up and still has the arm, it almost makes him pressure proof in a certain way in certain situations. Obviously, no quarterback is that. But his ability to create space between him and defenders and still get throws off because he has the arm and because he's so good at resetting, it's just different than what a lot of other quarterbacks can do. So other guys can make plays on the run, but his ability to create space and then reset is amazing. He did it on several different throws today. I mean, he did it on the long Allen throw down the right, or the long Keenan Allen throw down the right sideline.
Oh, yes.
He does it all the time. And I think it's just such a special characteristic that he has. Yeah. And then you combine that again, like we've talked about, some of the stuff they do with Allen on third and fourth down is just nasty. They ran, I think it was Arches, the Shanahan play, where you have the tight end on the slot. He clears out, and then Allen runs a little angle behind him, essentially, which is against man coverage on third down. He's going to be an advantage. They ran on that on the fourth and eight. That's what they ran. Allen's open, gets the first down. I mean, they just have such good personnel with Herbert, with Allen, to make the most of those situations. I mean, they're really good, man. It's just I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, he's on his way to being like one of the better quarterbacks in the entire league. And when you give a guy like that as many opportunities as Staley is right now, they're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah. He's a special mix of traits in the sense that there's very few times that you watch him and it's like, oh, why did his eyes go there? Like that's why he's so devastating on third down, is because he's always going to the right spot and he can actually make the throw. There's a lot of times on third down where quarterbacks, they know they have to get there, but they're like, my feet aren't set. I got to check it down. We're ending with a punt. All right. I took the single. All right. We're fine. He's going to find that deep dig, find that deep stop route, find these deeper routes that are 10, 12, 15 yards, 5, 10 yards past the sticks. And it's like, we talk about changing the math in a run game as a plus one and all that, but it's like he's changing the math of the field, like what he can attack. And like you're saying with the resetting, you're talking about a deeper throw. He even had one on stick, and it's unbelievable how much stick it gets around. And all stick is just double outs, guys. And it's like you can do out a 3x1 or 2x2. And it's just like, it's just such a core concept for everybody. It's just like, I feel like I'm repeating myself. I'm like, oh, you run stick. It's like this only concept I know. I feel like it's just because everyone runs it. But anyways, on stick, you go outside in on the read. And he, rather than getting caught up on the outside throw on the stick, the flat, he like without his feet even resetting, he was able to zing in like a little inside one to Mike Williams, and it went for like 14 yard gain on like a third and four, give or take. But like what you're talking about, how he's able to throw so hard without resetting or quickly resetting, it's like it gets the ball in the playmaker's hands that much faster. And it's just like now it's the ball's, it's just math. Like the ball is that many miles per hour faster getting to, and he operates so quickly with his mind.
And he's so twitchy for a big guy. That's the thing. Twitchy. The way that he can kind of flip his hips like that, and that's how he can reset, it is really
without
impressive.
Getting all messed up. Like it's
he's
like,
very rare. I mean, just like a rare combination of traits as a quarterback, and you see it come up all the time. Yeah. I mean, but again, they got a couple of little breaks here and there, and they lose this game. I mean, that's how good the Browns are. I mean, you have the very iffy pass interference on the Williams fourth and four that probably could have gone either way, and then. And if, let's say, I think that Vizcaino missing the extra point was bad for the Browns. Because them being up by one, they go on into the next set of downs, up 42-41, I believe.
Yep.
they run the ball on first and 10. On second and 10, they throw it. And I can't remember who ended up matching on the receiver, but it was a really nice job. It was a zone coverage, but I think it was, oh, it was Derwin James. It was okay. Derwin James matched on Higgins and did a really good job on second and 10. So they get to third and 10 and they run the ball. They run the ball on third and 10. They punt it away. Chargers get the ball back and they end up winning. They push them in, obviously.
Yep.
Not a lot of urgency by the Browns on the final drive. I think that was also a concern. Mm-hmm. Overall, though, I still think a pretty impressive performance by Cleveland. I mean, you have their running game is still so nasty. I mean, so Chubb's touchdown run is so good. Their screen game is so good. I still have my Baker concerns. I mean, just watching him double clutch every once in a while. He played well, all things considered. But I still just, that gap between what Herbert is and what he is, I think that there are moments where that just shows up in this game. And I think it's a
jarring,
truly important gap.
It's jarring, especially when you watch Allen and Mahomes. And then, like, say, so as we're watching this game, I'm glancing back at, you know, at the Chargers game and the Browns game. And then you see Herbert operating so quickly. And then all of a sudden you see Baker. And it's like, you know, I'm not trying to knock Baker too much, but, you know, it just it doesn't look the part as compared to these three other guys. And then on top of it, like you're saying, like all these throws are coming across over the middle of the field. All of a sudden he's double clutching it. He has to zing it in. It just looks a little harder, but it is just jarring going from those three. And then just all of a sudden there's Baker doing that stuff or trying to read out the stuff that they are doing, like freakish natures.
I think the Browns are really good. I think they'll be in it till the end. You know, they were missing their left tackle today. I mean, a bunch of different stuff. I think they'll be in it till the end. They have so much talent. And you on defense still today, I mean, Garrett was really good again. Some of the stunts with McDowell, they didn't even have Clowney today.
Yeah.
It was funny that Slater said, told the backs to stop chipping. Because you could tell it was annoying him. I mean, that one sack that Garrett had, he's like, no more. Don't touch him again. Because you see that on those late chips, that's not a good thing for an offensive tackle. You want it to be early and immediate, or you don't want it at all. I completely understand that. Especially because
the tackles are setting inside, so they get the outside help, but then they can't do that forever. They're like, well, I guess I got to get into this pass set at some point.
It has to be immediate. If it's not immediate, then it's not going to be helping you.
Yep.
But that final drive, when I say the Browns, I think I'll be in it to the end. When they're set up to play the game they want to play, they're really good.
Yeah.
When they have to get it, when they have to have the bucket at the end, I just don't trust them to do it.
Yeah.
It's just a different feeling to me when he's trotting out there needing to go down and win the game than it is with the other guy, than it is with Herbert or is with some of the other guys that we watch every single week. It's just a different feeling in that moment when they're not the ones dictating, when they're not the ones scrambling. They can look amazing because the run game is so dominant. And when they're playing from ahead, I think they'll be really good, or when the game script is in their favor. But when they need one, there's still that creeping doubt in the back of my mind. It's not going to go away.
It really creeped up too today. It's like you kind of felt it, like when they got the ball back right there at the end, you're kind of like, no timeouts. That's a long way to go for Baker. Like, you know, it wasn't like they left too much time on the clock for him. Like, cause you don't know what that drop back, but when you that's a 2 minute situation. When you get into the 2 minute situation, it's totally NFL is just so situational, like down distance wise and clock management wise, like that. All of a sudden, the Browns only being up 1 point, they're in a 4 minute drill instead of kind of like a moving 2 minute drill to get the field goal thing. But yeah, it's just like that. I completely agree. It's a totally different feeling like when Baker had the ball at the end of the game, just because that's not how they're designed to win.
All right, let's get to who grabbed our attention this week.
Gentlemen, you have my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
Lot of stuff to sort through this week. So let's talk about a couple people. Over the course of a football Sunday, a very long football Sunday, there are a few guys that's like, all right, you made me stand up straight in my chair. Here are a few of them. Let's start with the greatest quarterback of all time playing some of the best football he's ever played. Like, it's just absolutely ridiculous how well he's playing right now. Tom Brady, 30 of 41, 411 yards, 5 touchdowns. I know the Dolphins aren't winning a lot of games. This is still a pass defense that is teetered on the edge of the top 10. For the first month or so of the season. This is what they do well, presumably, not today.
No. Ask Josh Allen how this defense looked a couple weeks ago.
Exactly.
Like, I mean,
exactly.
They have been giving people fits. And Tom Brady, Pro Football Reference, tweeted this out right before we started. It's only the 8th time that a QB has had a pass rating over 140 with over 40 pass attempts, and like ever in NFL history. It's like, and that's what it felt like. And You know what the Dolphins
he didn't play for the second half of the fourth quarter.
It felt like like St. Thomas Aquinas, like one of those high school like just beat ups. Like I like we're also in the backups in there. You know, let's put Gabbert in there. But like they're just dicing up the man coverage. Like Antonio Brown finished with 8 targets, Mike Evans 8 targets, Chris Godwin 11 targets, and then even like you got Gio Bernard on running angle routes in the red zone.
Yep,
it's just like Leonard
Fournette running.
What the hell?
Quick outs from empty, like actual routes.
Like actual, I had to double check because, you know, we're down these single digit numbers. I have to check with all these guys. I'm like, that's Fournette, right?
It was
like,
really
that's
funny.
A back they signed a couple of weeks ago, like with some injuries or something. I know. It's ridiculous. But they knew they're getting man coverage. That's the thing is if you're going to live in that world and the offense knows that and a quarterback like Tom Brady knows that, hey, you're going to be in man coverage every single play. It's the fact that they're not hitting just like man beaters, like mesh, like the Antonio Brown long touchdown was just mesh where he climbed up. But then they're hitting like deep hinge routes 20 yards down the field to Mike Evans where he's just like the difference is like we're going to get to it. But like watching other offenses run a hitch in those situations on first and 10, like, OK, 5 yards. We're good there. The Bucs are like, let's get an explosive. Like, let's just drop no play action. Let's just drop back and just like let's just dice up man coverage left and right. Nope. Like a limited play action, just dropping back 7-step dropbacks. Protecting it up and just having our awesome receivers just win over and over and over. Gronk didn't even play today. Like it's insane. It's actually insane what they did today.
He's playing quarterback at such an insanely high level. And it's just the way he operates in the pocket. We shouldn't be surprised, but when you combine that with all the talent that they have, that's what you see in these moments. And that touchdown to Antonio Brown, the right guard gets beat on that play. Mm-hmm. It's not a pressure, but the right guard gets beat on that play. And he just managed to he drifts back just enough in the pocket to get that off. And where he puts that ball to Antonio Brown,
it's perfect.
Ridiculous throw.
Yeah.
I mean, just when you look at the still right before that ball leaves his hand, he's in the middle of the field. He throws about 7 yards left of where he is, leads him into open space, and he runs it for a touchdown. And then the Mike Evans touchdown, he lets that ball go half a second later. He gets crushed and does not get that thing off. That's a 50-yard throw down the field that he throws at the back of his drop on time, looking off the safety just long enough to get it out.
It's insane.
And just the way he navigates the pocket. I mean, you have to play almost perfect football to be this aggressive and still be able to not worry about your protection. And he's playing close to perfect football in these moments. Like there was that Brian Hoyer clip from Hard Knocks about talking about how he navigates the pocket and he stands within like a box that's 2 feet by 2 feet. That's what you're seeing all the time right now. The precision is just absolutely amazing. And you combine that with their ability to throw the ball down the field and just really small stuff today. A lot of the screens, a lot of the ways they got Godwin involved. I mean, it's when they're rolling, it's really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before. It's hard football, but the thing is, when the quarterback is doing 7-step drops and the ball is just coming out right on the first hitch, it's not 2-hitch, 3-hitch, and then the ball comes out.
Yep, exactly.
And then on top of it, the guys are all winning the routes. All like if you're playing man coverage, they're forcing you to win one on ones. But they're just taking turns, going like, I think Antonio Brown's going to win on this one. Mike Evans. Who's Mike Evans got on him? Yeah, I like that matchup. Like just. And you know you're able to operate without the play action concepts, like the deeper ones, and we talk a million times. Those are technically 7-step concepts. Mm-hmm. Like that's just what the route distribution is and the route depth. So you make it easier on the quarterback by making it more or less half field read or a progression read where you can go left to right or right to left. And you also, you know, touchdown to check down, make it easy on. Like I just said, we're talking about Sale going, hey, alert to touch or to Sale to check it down. They're doing that without the play action concept, making all 4 or 5 guys live eligible receivers. So it's not just 2 or 3 guys and everybody's wadded up. And then he's dropping back. So they're not getting any play fake on it. And they just do it like dozens of times a game. And we just don't blink an eye. Like it's insane. Like this is that 2015 Cardinals offense just like tweaked up like 5 more times, like just with even better players and a better quarterback, which is I never thought I would see again. Like, but we've been seeing it probably the last like, you know, year ish, about 12 months.
It's really funny. There are moments where I watch other quarterbacks and the defense will instantly get pressure or they'll bring a pressure look. And it's like, well, what are you supposed to do about that?
Yeah.
And Brady's the answer. It's if you play perfect football, you can beat that shit. And that's what he's doing. He's getting the ball out and just operating at such a fast-paced high level. And that's what this looks like. It's truly special when it's clicking, and that today was one of those days.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to an offense that we have not said that much about over the course of the season so far. That's the Atlanta Falcons. Kyle Pitts. Hey. You have my attention. Goodness Woo. Gracious. This is what I hoped for.
Yes.
Before the season started. Not just the production, right? 9 catches, 119 yards, and a touchdown. It's the way they used him. Mm-hmm. He's running deep posts. Yep. On the final play that was just like the backbreaker kind of game sealer. He's running a post with Cordarrelle Patterson pinning down the backside safety. Yep. And he's a tight end. But I didn't want him to be a tight end, and he wasn't today. There are a couple plays, right? Like the one long vertical route coming across, he's starting in line. Yep. But he's just a receiver. Oh, in a lot of these moments, and he's the best receiver that was on the field for them today with Calvin Ridley not playing.
And a few weeks ago, I tweeted about it, and we made a joke about it, but he was like pass protecting against JPP. And like, you know, you see it, and when those clips are good to see, because it's not like he's not going to win it, make his money doing that. No, but it just unlocks so much for the offense when a defense has to go, he's actually a tight end. We have to play in base personnel. Otherwise, they'll road grade us.
And it's a guy who can hit 1-3 a game, where it's like, now you have to account for
That's exactly what it is. It's a center going. It's Brooke Lopez learning how to shoot threes. That's what it is. Or Marcus Saul, like once he went to Toronto and stuff. Like, that's what it is. And it's like, he just doesn't enough. Because now what happens is when the Falcons split him out, he was like in the slot. The Jets, like, even though the Falcons, are technically in, like, I think they're in 12 or 22 personnel, the Jets have to match with a safety, and he's on an island. So now you have a safety working the slot. Do you know how many safeties can play slot? I'd say there's like 2 in the league, 3 in the league that can actually legitimately do that, play man coverage. And then it's Kyle Pitts, who's legitimately uncoverable, like by pretty much anybody. Like, he really is. He's already a mismatch at this. And he's like five games into his rookie season. It's unbelievable. He's making these guys look like how he did in college. And it's like, he's just figuring it out and just getting better and better. But the fact that big post, the one with Cordarrelle Patterson, they're in 13 personnel. Jets have
to. The coolest part.
Sorta. And the safeties are at 8 yards because they go, well, you know, they're trying to burn the clock and they're in heavy personnel. So we're taught, this is how we're taught, is that they're going to probably run like, you know, a duo or outside zone. And we got to fill that run, get the ball back. And then, Kyle Pitts is actually a legit 4-4 guy that can blow right past you. It's like, that is what these freaks can do. They just unlock stuff because they make it so hard for defenses to work off tendencies and tee off on that.
A guy I did not expect to talk about today or at any point over the first half of this season, Kyle Pitts' Florida teammate. Kadarius Toney is just amazing, I guess. Amazing. I know the Giants lost, but I felt like the way he played today, we had to mention it in some capacity. We've talked a ton about, we can't talk about Trayvon Diggs anymore or the Cowboys offense anymore. Cowboys are just good. Flat out, Cowboys are just good. And they are going to be a problem for people. Toney was the most exciting player in this game, though.
Absolutely.
I was noticing this when we were talking about Daniel Jones on Friday. When he's playing on turf, when he stops, the amount of rubber that slides into the air, it's like watching a superhero movie. It's unbelievable. I mean, and the same thing happened again today. I mean, that ball where he runs a whip and somehow after cutting back outside to catch the whip, cuts back inside on a dime and then accelerates and almost scores a touchdown.
He split two gaps on the same play. Like, he caught the ball, split the two defenders, and then later, as he still has the ball in his hands, split another two defenders. Like, just sick.
It's wild. I mean, what he can do with the ball in his hands is wild. And then he catches a slot fade for, like, a huge chunk gain down the right sideline. I pretty much willing to say already that I was very wrong about this. Like him either, right?
No, I was lower on him because it was like, you saw these flashes, but it was like, you know, 3 times a game.
What does it look like? What does this look like in an NFL situation?
I couldn't see it in NFL. It was like, you're going to get yourself fired just trying to, you know, work this gadget guy. Yeah, he's fine with the ball in his hands, but he's got to get the ball in his hands. And it's like, all of a sudden, his route discipline is already much improved, which was like my big negative on him, which made sense. He bounced around positions, but I was like, but he's a senior. He has a lot of reps already. And they worked with him. You can tell they were like, they're telling him to take his time on some of those routes, or maybe he's figured that out. He's not in such a hurry to like get out of his break. Like, he's learning to that kind of Cole Beasley kind of a Stephon Diggs way of kind of, you take that little hesitation step before you start your route. And I think that's timing things up better. But he's like, he's got rare body control. I mean, rare balance, like, which is saying something. And it's funny you said the superhero thing, like how all the spray coming up, because I actually thought how he moves. Do you remember the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies?
Yes.
And the first one, he's running across like the, as real bad CGI. He's jumping across like the warehouses, like all the buildings. And he's like, woo. And he's like, how he's like all bendy and he looks like Gumby on that. That's how Tony looks when he runs. Like it looks like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man learning his powers and jumping across in bad CGI. Like that's what I'm trying to figure out what it is. I'm like, that's what it's like Gumby. Like he just moves in such a weird way. And he's also part of the surprisingly taller than you think club. Tony is.
How tall is he?
He's all of 6 foot, like legitimately 6 foot and change. But he like moves and
Like he's 5'8". I mean, 5'8", it's crazy. 5'9". He's like a joystick. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
He was a legit 6 foot, almost 200 pounds, which is I think makes it even more special how he's moving. But I admit I was low on him. But if he plays like this, this consistency like this, it's like holy shit, the sky is the limit for him because he does some rare things.
I mean, just a lot of exciting moments from rookies today. Pitts, Kadarius Toney, Rondell Moore. Just all Rondell Moore does is make crazy plays. I mean, just the pass catchers in this group did not look like the ones from last year. Like we had a lot more prototypical, just this is what a number one receiver in the NFL looks like. And we did not have that many of those guys this year. Still just immediately making plays. It is a cool era for pass catching talent because it comes in a bunch of different shapes and sizes.
Yes.
All right. Our next one here is actually a new segment that we're introducing tonight. It is time for the State Farm Surprisingly Great Performance of the Week presented by State Farm. The only way we could go with this was the Pittsburgh Steelers offense, man. I expected them to lay an egg against Denver. I really did. I mean, the way that they were playing, I thought the Broncos defense, we know the Broncos defense is full of talent. Yep. And that just didn't happen today. You know, they played so much better than I expected.
I know Shield tried to tell us on Friday.
He did.
He told us. He was like, hey, us against the world. He tried to tell us that. I know. But you can just see just even in the box score. But it's like they on the all those RPOs. One of the frustrations I've had with Big Ben, and I think all of us do, is they run all these RPOs. And it's like, okay, that's fine. You're getting this little 3-4 yard gain. Fine. No one's really breaking tackles. They're quick out routes. If it's covered, Big Ben's, you know, double clutch and triple clutch, and it doesn't create the plays how he used to. And I think they just took the keys away from him and they just made those RPOs just run only options. I think that's exactly what it looked like. Cause all of a sudden I have seen the Steelers receivers just straight up blocking on run plays as opposed to running bubbles and flats and outs.
And he was looking down at handoffs too. It wasn't where he was just putting it in the basket and pulling it back. He was like actually giving handoffs too.
And exactly. It looked like a legitimate run game. It didn't look like whatever the hell the Steelers have been doing for the last, you know, year-ish or so. And like just little tweaks they did, they went 12 personnel and spread it out.
I thought that Gentry, number 81, had a really nice impact on the game.
I know.
Several different times in the run game, he came in as a blocking tight end and like made an impact. I thought he was a big part of the success they had on the ground.
They went bully ball. It looked like the Steelers. Like it did. And it was like go balls. I already mentioned before on the show is that like when you're playing these defenses, they're playing top down and trying to rally and tackle. And that's what keeps happening to Steelers. Why they can't create yak is because the defenders know what they're trying to do. Get the ball quick in their hands, RPOs and you know, adjusted screens and all that. And then, okay, well, we don't have to play deep. We could just play and keep everything in front of us. How you beat that is you have to beat them over the top. You have to lean into the punch. Gash them when they're trying to gash you. And that's what they did today. He actually threw deep on some of these concepts. Like there were still some quick gamey type concepts, but it was hitting, you know, if it was stick, he was hitting the go ball on the outside. And that just keeps defenses honest. And especially a defense like a Fangio one that's going to play in these softer shells that want to play top down. That's how you get them, not get them out of it, but make them honest. They did it. I'm still stunned that I'm here talking about the Steelers offense. I thought it was going to be weeks before we had to worry about it again. And here we are. They look decent today.
Well, I think that the formula that they followed, they ran the ball pretty well. And this blend of Roethlisberger's contributions with the receiver's contributions, I think can work for them in the right moments.
Yeah.
That first deep ball that he threw, Johnson is really beautiful. He fake the outside release and then cut it back inside of Fuller, and he stacked him immediately. So that was just one of those things where Fuller's playing the outside release, and he's just like, you know what, fine. If you want to play me that far outside, I'm just going to cut it up then.
That's high-level route running. Not high-level, but that's like a next step thing. If you see a receiver doing that, it's like, ooh, like that's good stuff.
He had him. And then he got the PI later, and then the other side of it is, so that's just a, my guy's going to beat you down the field. I just have to put the ball in a spot where he can catch it. The Claypool huge play, that they win that with formation.
Yep.
They're in base because they were in 12 personnel. They had Gentry split out to the left. Claypool motions across. Von Miller has to walk out with him because they were in base. So he runs just a little slant against Von Miller and then takes it 60 yards or whatever he did. That's just a big man that's fast making a play.
Yep.
And then a couple other times, it's Roethlisberger. He's still a guy who's been in the league for 15, 20 years. He still knows what he's seeing.
He has a lot of reps.
There's a third and three at one point. I want to say it was Simmons walked down because they had a hard count or whatever. Simmons walked down. They saw that he was coming. He hits Claypool on a slant because he knows the safety's going to vacate. And then on the Claypool touchdown, I can't tell in the moment that the camera cut to it is actually good timing. He says something. He's like, Chase. And I couldn't tell exactly what he was saying to him, but there was kind of like an acknowledgement, and Claypool took it right between the safeties and he just hit him immediately over the top, right between the two, like the guys in the deep half.
Yeah.
So there was some sort of communication there.
Like, give me eyes or something.
And so there were a few of those moments today where it's like, all right, I'm still a guy who's seen everything in the league.
Yeah.
If you give me the answers to the test, my physical skills have not deteriorated to the point where I can't make these throws. So you trust your guys to win because they're really good receivers. You get the ball in their hands, and you have a couple things that are just decided for you before the play even happens. He tried to throw two interceptions in the red zone.
He tried
to throw the ball to Alex Johnson twice, but they did enough stuff today to overcome it.
To overcome that. Yeah, I know. But that, hey, another example of why you want defenses to treat tight ends like tight ends, right there. 12 personnel, they had a match in base, and it creates those advantages. Like, if you, that's, hey, Kyle Pitts, I'm telling you, it's like you just want to see him block a couple times. Just gonna rope it back. But no, that's exactly it. They did enough. It's just so much better than whatever you want to call it, that's been the first 4 weeks. It's nice to see actually something worth watching as opposed to what it was.
All right, that was the State Farm surprisingly great performance of the week. Because remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Get a quote today.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Why don't you explain this to me like I am an 8-year-old?
All right. Every single week, every single NFL Sunday, there's going to be some stuff that needs some explaining. And this week, the group that needs to do some explaining is the Panthers offense, which looked like a pretty good unit over the first couple weeks. We were talking about the Sam Darnold essence, and it seems like they might have turned back into a pumpkin. Pretty rough day for the old Carolina Panthers offense. And when you can't win a game where your defense does everything they can to win it for you, where the opposing offense cannot move the ball for the majority of the game, that's a rough look in the NFL. And that's exactly what happened to the Panthers today.
Yeah, I'm really glad I wagered on the Panthers today because that was just unbelievable. I was like, this game is unfolding perfect. This is awesome. Eagles can't move the ball. We're good. Who cares if Darnold doesn't look great? Like, it was like, oh, no. But that was the thing. It was the O-line woes. We had mentioned before that the Panthers offense, it was like the O-line doesn't have a lot of talent. But at least they've like, they're, you can tell they're well coached, and you can tell that they do sound things, especially in the run game. Today, the run game, yeah, they still did those sound things, but you could see where the talent deficit showed up in the pass protection. And that, you know, Darnold doesn't help that all the time because he holds onto the ball and yada yada. That's kind of what he is. But sometimes they had a lot of free runners. And I think that just kind of, when you got I shouldn't say panicky, but yeah, I mean, he's been panicky.
He needs the right circumstances.
Everything's got to unfold perfect for him. Yes. Like, and that's what, up until after the Houston game, that's even watching that game, he still has those dummy moments. He still has those missed throws. But if everything unfolds perfect for him, he's good. And he had a couple moments where it was okay, but then he had a whole lot of bad today. Like, and I'm going to talk about stick. Because this concept, everybody runs it. And guess what? You know, Joe Brady was a Saints guy. Makes sense that Justin Herbert ran it too, right? With Joe Lombardi there. It's third down. I tweeted this one. It's third down. It goes outside in on stick out 2x2. And like Darnold stares at the flat and then tries to rally to the inside route. And then he scrambles. He ends up scrambling for the first down. But it was
I remember that. Yep.
Man, how are you? That's stick. Like, that's how much I mentioned that play, is that everyone knows it. Everyone knows what the read is. And that, that tells me, even his pick on the hole shot, the attempted hole shot, he predetermined that, because there's no way.
Exactly where he was going before the play started.
That corner sunk to 12 yards when he threw it.
It's like nowhere even close to the flat.
Like the when Justin Herbert hit that hole shot, I should stop. Herbert's getting into Mahomes territory where I shouldn't compare what other quarterbacks do to what he does. But like, remember he hit it against Washington. He readjusted. He rallied. His arm strength is so good that he was able to hit the whole shot after he looked at the inside route. You can tell Darnold's like, I saw this on film, so screw it, I'm whipping it in there. But that's missed stick throw. That interception on there, that just speaks that he was predetermining stuff. And stuff did not unfold how he thought he was. And it was just a whole game of it.
And I think every once in a while, right? Like, when you throw an interception, it's a tip ball. It's a bad moment. All three of his today felt like, I'm going right here no matter what. I want to say, know exactly without looking at the tape, but I think the other two were just cover three.
Yep.
And the corner just matched on the guy that he was across from, and I don't know why he decided to throw the ball. Yep. I mean, it made no sense.
It was weird.
It made no sense in either of the two. I'm curious what the actual reasoning was on both of them. Because the second one to Slay, he just forces it to Moore for no reason. And then the third one was right to Nelson. It looked like a really similar situation. And the offensive line, 100%. I mean, already not a good group coming into the season, right? Now, your left tackle's out. You do the thing that I never love. You move the right tackle you just paid a bunch of money to left tackle. And then you move a rookie third round pick at right tackle. It was a mess today. And you combine that with Javon Hargrave just being an absolute monster. Fletcher Cox had a few moments today. You know, Josh Sweat had a few moments today. It was all just an issue. But I think that was the concern, even when Darnold was playing well, right? If the circumstances start to deteriorate even a tiny bit, what does this end up looking like? I know that Christian McCaffrey didn't play today. Who knows what sort of difference that would have made just in terms of the stuff they could have done with him as a receiver out of the backfield. He does provide just an outlet. Not even just like individual like check down option. It provides an outlet just in terms of what the offense looks like. An outlet on third and six if you're Joe Brady. Like, it's not even just an outlet for Sam Darnold. Even with that in mind, this was the worst case scenario. This is exactly what we didn't want to see. He had more like negative 0.4 EPA per play today. I mean, it's like
unbelievable.
That's really, really, really bad.
It's basically as good as much as we just praised Tom Brady's performance and saying how rare that one was. This is like the negative side of that. Like, cause it's not even just the turnovers. It's just all those other missed opportunities. Like, that's when they compound like that, that's what makes offenses so hard. You can have an interception. Like, you can, we never want to say, oh, it's fine to have an interception, but it's like, that means you're being aggressive and trying to push the ball sometimes. But like what you're saying too, Robert, is that like having those interceptions be on like, just what? Like, you know, like, what was that? That's the scary signs. That's like Mahomes having a couple of fluke ones tonight and tip ball. Okay, whatever. Okay, stuff happens. But it's like, that's when you're watching these and having question marks of why you did that. Why did you throw that again? And it's not just one of them. It's multiple of those. That's the scary thing. And everything they've done that has been positive. It's like they still did some of it today, but it was just they don't have any room for error with that offensive line and just what Sam Darnold is just as a player. So that's when you don't create the points that you need, that's what this performance looked like, because it wasn't pretty.
Talk about room for error. This team does not do it itself any favors with the decision making from the coaching staff either. You punt on 4th and 2 from the 47-yard line.
Yeah.
You pooch punt, a 21-yard pooch punt from your kicker.
And he's done this multiple times now.
Like, it's just, we can't do this stuff anymore. Yeah. I am not one of those crush guys every single time they don't go. I'm not. That's not how I do this. Yeah. It's just, the game happens to you. You're not feeling it. Whatever. I think that there are some decisions, even if they're not analytically correct, that I can explain away. This team has done several things this year where they're making choices on fourth down that actively are reasons you lose the game or actively hurts your team. And it's frustrating to watch when we have coaches so far on the other side of this now. And you're just putting yourself at a market disadvantage. Yes. In this new climate, with the way that decision-making is working for a lot of coaches, if you're not giving yourself an edge, then it's noticeable. It's very obvious which coaches are not at this point.
Well, Staley knew what kind of type of game he was in. He was in a barn burner, okay? And then Rhule didn't understand that, you know, the other team's quarterback is not really moving the ball against you. It's like, it's okay to be aggressive. It's like, okay, that's like, you got to create these points. But it is jarring going from that to that.
And I want to say that pooch punt there was one moment. Oh, it was at the end of the second, quarter when they punted, the Eagles went down and kicked a field goal.
Yeah.
They got 3 points there. There was only 47 seconds left in the half. And that may not seem like a big deal. It's until you lose a rock fight, those 3 points are really important. And that's exactly what happened today.
Yes.
All right. One other group that needs to do some explaining for itself is just kickers in general. I want to say there were 11 missed extra points.
Is that what it was?
In the first two windows today and one on Thursday. Rough week for kickers, highlighted by what happened in the Packers-Bengals game.
Which was insane. We should have known it was going to be a weird weekend when the Thursday night game, I think the Rams kicker kicked like 3 kickoffs out of bounds. Like at least 2 of them. So it's like, maybe that should have tipped us off that we're in for a treat on Sunday. But that Bengals-Packers game is one of the most bizarre games I've ever watched in my entire life. Like, just
the Bengals did nothing offensively. The Jamar Chase touchdown is just such a crazy, fluky play.
Under Savage's armpit.
I will say, I was impressed by the Bengals' defense. I thought that they played well again, tackled really well.
Yes.
Against that Packers team, you really need to make sure that they're not getting cheap yards, because they'll take them all the time. They'll just flip out little RPOs to Adams. They love just creating cheap yardage, and they'll take what you give them.
Yeah.
And they did a really good job of taking that away today. I mean, Rodgers had to go into hero mode to Adams several different times for them to get what they needed to offensively. So I was impressed by what the Bengals did on defense. I was not impressed by some of the decisions at the end. When you play for a 57-yard field goal, you deserve to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. And both teams kind of going like, oh, we're playing for a field goal kind of thing. And also, like, I've never seen either. I just have to say this. I've never seen a ball hit the wind flag on the top of a goalpost. I've never seen that. I've been to a million practices, games, everything. I've seen a million kicks, good kickers, bad kickers. I've never seen that where it actually hit the wind flag. Marshall Newhouse, he commented on it. He said, he's like, that's a lifetime prop bet. Like that's a prop bet we all just hit finally that all of us just hit for the first time. But that's exactly what it is. It's that if you're playing for those field goals or playing for the harder thing, like even last week,
57 yards, they didn't have to do that. It was 3rd and 5. You didn't have to try to get 3 yards to make it a 57-yard field goal.
Why not? Oh, you don't like those chances. You don't want it all the 60-yard ones. Like it's. I think the coaches see all these other kickers making those kicks, and they're like, oh, this is easy. It's just gambler's fallacy. Like that's all it is. But I honestly, where these kicks came in, like Dan Campbell, I think just honestly was like, hey, I'm not even gonna bother with the extra point. I'm going for 2 because I just saw what the Vikings kicker missed a field goal just 5 minutes ago. Like, I think that's just what happened for a few of these teams too, going for it on fourth down. They're like, screw this. We're done with leaving up our games to the kickers missing these things.
Well, that was a great moment for kickers, was the Greg Joseph game winner. Did you realize that it was a negative EV play to go for two there at the end with time left still. Like, the math tells you not to do that. I love it. Like, if you're Dan Campbell, who gives a shit? What do you have to lose in that moment?
Yeah, and also it's like, we're winning. Like, you're literally winning. You're literally up 1 point.
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
Even if the math tells you don't have to do that, I don't mind it at all. Cousins had to make a couple on-the-nails throws there. I mean, the one to Thielen is very, not as impressive because it was more space, but a similar idea to the one that they hit to Adams against San Francisco. He hits that, he hits another one, and they make the field goal. Kind of a monumentous kick for Mike Zimmer, potentially. Like, there's a chance if he misses that, he's done.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. Like, I guess it's today now because it's 1 a.m. here. But there's a chance that I don't, maybe that's overstating it. I wouldn't have been shocked. If they lose to the Lions.
Yeah. Especially how they lost, too.
Yes.
Talk about playing not to win. Like, same thing. Like, how they did their 4-minute drill trying to burn the clock at the end. You're telling your running back not to fumble, of course, but it's like, when you play scared, that's kind of what happens. You don't create the luck, that you create the bad luck. And I mean, Zimmer and Cousins' reaction, I think they, do you see that?
I think they knew.
I think they're about to punch each other, like legitimately punch each other out of like excitement and fury. And like, I don't know, like just, I don't know what those two have going together, but I think
it's a very weird relationship.
I know.
Extremely weird relationship.
I think they're in the manhole together and they just hate each other. And I think they're just like, yeah, but we're in it together.
On the Lions side of this, I think it's great. If you're a Lions fan, I understand that it's heartbreaking to lose like this and you just want to win a game. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? This season is for nothing.
Yep.
Play hard. You know, it's so easy. I think in this moment, if you're getting blown out every single week, it's an entirely different thing. But if you're the guys in the locker room, it's like, God, we're so close. They're stealing these games from us. Yep. I mean, it is so easy to preach that to that room, where I think you easily keep that group. You keep that group engaged. We're so close, guys. Yep. We're so close. Imagine the celebration they're going to have when they get their one only win of the season. It's going to be the greatest moment.
I know.
This is fine. If I were a Lions fan, I'd be like, you know what? This is great. We're in it. We're not embarrassing. Let's go. Because the Jags are going to push you. They're going to push you for that number one pick. And I don't know what they're going to do with it. The quarterback situation in college football seems
awful.
Like an epic disaster, but it's still better to have the number one pick than not having the number one pick.
Agreed.
If there's a team that desperately needs one or whatever, maybe you trade down. This is, in my opinion, a good outcome for this year's Lions team.
They're competitive. I mean, they really are. You can tell those players play with fire. Like, so obviously they're doing something.
And half the team
right.
is hurt. Like, and they're still in these games. That's okay.
It's totally, and like you said, the end result's fine. It's good process and good results. I think that's what they have to go with. I think that's the path they're going down. I know, but and honestly, I do want sidebar. Yeah, the quarterback situation for the 2022 draft is pretty rough. I've taken my first glimpses of film this past week, and that is a discussion for another time. But I think some of these teams that maybe punted to next season about finding their quarterback in the future are going to be kicking themselves.
All right. Speaking of quarterbacks, let's put up the quarterback bat signal, because this was a worthwhile day. Well, not a worthwhile day, but it's worth having a conversation about what happened with San Francisco today.
Yes. So here we go with Trey Lance. It was very jarring to see. I keep saying jarring today, but when I was seeing the ages, it really struck home like how young Trey Lance is.
Yes.
And seeing like the list was like youngest quarterbacks to make their first start. I think Tommy Maddox was the youngest. I think Sam Darnold was second youngest. Mike Vick was up there. And it was like Trey Lance. And that really hit home. I was like, man, he really is young. He does not have a lot of time under his belt, a lot of reps under his belt. And that's showed today. I think his head was spinning a little bit. I don't think he's not a dummy. I plenty of proof he's not a dummy. It's just that I think he got to a real NFL game plan, where stuff is situational and you have a 5-10 new third down plays, 5-10 new red zone plays, 5-10 new second and long plays. And I think on some of those, he was like, I think I know what this play is. But after that first read, I'm screw that. I'm hitting the button, because he
ran the ball 16 times.
Yeah. And he looked good. He looks good running.
He looks great running.
But throwing right now, you can tell his head spinning. It's just the other signs, other than the obvious misses, is how he's missing. He's missing high, and how the ball's coming out. Like, if you notice on some, because he'll throw some balls and it's a beautiful spiral, looks great. And then he has a lot of waiver balls right now, really hard waiver balls.
The one to Sanu, it honestly looked like the one that Sanu dropped that hit him right in the hands.
Probably broke his finger.
It honestly looked like Sanu was trying to protect himself from the ball. Like he was trying to bat it down because it got on him so fast and was so wobbly that he was frightened for his well-being.
It's already hard enough to catch a hard throw or a hard football throw. Now a wobbly spiral will break your finger. Like, that'll bust your finger right open. But all those signs, the wobbly ball, usually that happens. He's sailing the throws because he's overstriding. Something that you've seen Cam Newton do for years and years, and he got better as his career went along, is because I think Lance right now, on routes that he's guessing on, he has to see the route come open. Mm-hmm. And so what he's doing, he's compensating with his arm, and he's overstriding because he thinks he has to gun it in there. And
Josh Allen would do that a lot when he was younger.
Exactly. A lot of guys with big arms have gotten away with it for their whole lives. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh shit, I have to anticipate now. Like, I got a good arm. Who cares? No, you got to anticipate. That window closes a lot quicker in the NFL. And also, when you're guessing sometimes and trying to force things, and I was guilty of this when I played, is I didn't have this arm strength. This is just me throwing, is squeezing the ball too hard. And when you squeeze the ball too hard, because he's really gritty.
You can see it. You can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that ball wavers out because it's not smoothly coming off your hand. It's a kind of a misconception when throwing a spiral. It's almost like you have to grip the ball less to let it really smooth, like flip off your hand, flip off that finger. So I think that's what it is, because you could see the talent there, because he had a couple throws. Like, he had a stop throw. Honestly, mm-hmm. It was 1 inch of room and he pinned it right on the receiver. Like, he has that incredible arm talent, but that's because he knew that route. He was like, I know I'm throwing this. I'm in rhythm. His mechanics look so much better on that. And then that's what it is. But it's you could tell why Shanahan was keep saying, he was like, that's why he was the number two quarterback, guys. Like, because that's what it looked like. I think it's just, he got some new plays today and then his head spinning. But, you know, there are some flashes there. It's just that it's tough when you got JJ Watt batting down 5 year throws. You know, that also stinks too, because you're just taking too long to throw. But I think it's just going to speed up, because as the game went along, he started speeding up. But it's just, it was a rough first go in the NFL, or first start for Trey Lance.
I'll say this today, even I don't think it says a ton that he struggled. We should expect him to struggle. He's a rookie quarterback. I will say, his struggles combined with, I don't think the offensive line played well. I mean, they struggled a lot in this game, which it kind of reset overall. The way that Lance played, the way the line played, the way that they have been playing, just reset the expectations we should have for the 49ers this year, which is kind of disappointing, right? I mean, there are people, their over-under was like 11. I mean, they were supposed to be a contender this year. They're not.
No.
Like, this team as constructed, it's going to take a while for him to get there. And if it takes a while for him to get there and the rest of their offense isn't as complete as we might have assumed coming into the year, I think we just have to recalibrate the way we talk about this team and the way we think about them, which I think kind of warrants a larger discussion.
Yeah.
Like, what is this team? Like, where are they going? If he's going to need all of this time, and, you know, they have got Trent Williams is in his mid-30s. Alex Mack is in his mid-30s. They have a defense that, you know, has a lot of missing pieces now. I mean, it's just kind of a something where I have to kind of step back and be like, all right, like, what do we really expect from this team over the next year? And then what does that mean for their overall trajectory? Because I felt like when they went up and got Lance, in my mind, right or wrong, was like, oh, this is the missing piece.
Yeah.
Like, this is when you trade this much for this guy, that's what this is. This is the missing piece. And that may just be me overreacting and may just be a miscalculation about what that move is. But they don't have any resources anymore after making this trade. And if you're kind of sitting there and he takes a year and now we're going into next year for them to see how this all plays out, I don't know. It's just not where I expected to be with them 5 games into the season. I guess I'll say that. They're 2-3. They're playing the best division in football, or one of them. Yep. I know Russell Wilson's hurt, but the Rams are still the Rams and the Cardinals are still the Cardinals. And now you're sitting there at 2-3. I mean, I don't know where they go this year. And then if they kind of fall flat again, it's like, all right, where are we? Where are we with this era of the Niners if they have another like 6-12 season or something like that? 6-11.
Yeah. And
I think they're better than that, but I mean, it's again, we expected so much more of them.
That can be a path. Like, that's the thing, that the fact that that path is even alive. It watching this offense, and it's not like what they were running as far as play calls. It was like how hard it looked. It looked like when they were starting some of the like grab bag names that they've started the last few years. You know, these random third rounder, fourth rounder, undrafted guys that Kyle Shanahan tabs as his guy and has a great start. And we all go, oh my God, he can coach anybody at quarterback. Like, but like those games, like that's how this game seemed. And I kind of thought it would be a little more like, yeah, well, training wheels will be on, but there'll be just a little more excitement to the offense.
Yes, exactly.
It just felt like, don't fuck up. Like that's what the offense felt like, more, and which is weird for to see from a Shanahan offense, which is usually just really flowing, and it just all pieces together real well, and it still felt like they were just kind of going like, okay, we kind of like this with him. All right, let's try both. All right, well that kind of like they're still figuring out what they are, and it's week five now, and I get you weren't planning on going with Trey Lance. I mean, I think they were, but then now they switched ideas during camp to go back to Jimmy G. I don't know what they decided and all that. But it's strange, like you said, it's a strange place that they're in right now.
It's a letdown.
Yeah.
It's just a letdown. I mean, it's just a letdown.
Especially how the defense
to
is playing.
And they kept them in this game. And it's not like they got blown out in this game.
Nope.
And I think they play hard all the time. I mean,
that could just be more feisty.
To me, the possibility of Lance and the promise of Lance is still there.
Yeah.
But I just expected it to be so much more enticing, so much more engaging, so much more everything than it was today. I mean, this team was supposed to be more than this year, I guess is what I'll say.
I should be more excited.
Yeah. Yes.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Not today, my good man. I'm feeling saucy.
Much to the dismay of Toby from Twitter, we're going to talk about the Bears a little bit. So I want to talk about the Bears running game just very briefly because this to me is like what secret sauce is about. You watch a game. You have these little tiny one or two things that are the reason a team won. And Justin Fields was not explosive today. He was not electric today. The passing game was not creating big plays the same way it did against Detroit. But they still won this game because they racked up 139 yards on the ground on 34 carries. It's not a monster game, but the little tiny ways that this team has been able to sustain success on the ground, they were sixth in rushing DVOA coming into this game. And that, to me, is a huge part of whatever this equation they're going to have to follow is with Justin Fields. They want him to throw the ball 20 times a game. And if you're going to do that, you need to play defense and you need to run the ball. And this is not a good offensive line. It's not like an offensive line full of stars. But the ways they created angles in the run game today and then some of the individual performances from some of those offensive linemen, this team can run the ball. And if they can run the ball this well, the way they have over the last couple weeks with their under-center run game, which is a huge part of this Bill Lazor formula that they're following, then I think they have a chance to sustain something on offense. And combined with the way that they're playing defense, they're going to be a tough out every single week. That's kind of what it feels like to me.
And with Fields as the quarterback, that under center passing game off of it matches so much better.
Exactly.
Like it can, like we talk about pads, but you can see what the upside of all doing that is. And really the run today that stood out to me was they ran a little bit of everything, but they was doing a inside zone or weak zone out of like, especially out of hip formations, but they did it out of different personnel groupings. And this run concept is, I mean, everybody runs it. It's day one install play. And there's outside zone, which is towards the tight end usually. You can aim outside without a tight end, but it's a little harder and it's more situational. But then the inside zone or weak zone is generally away from the tight end, to the open side, away from the tight end. And even how the play is sounds, like if I'm in a right formation, my tight end's to the right, I'm running this to the left. This play, more often than not, ends up becoming almost like a cutback, get north play for the running back.
Consistently today.
Consistently. And you're seeing more and more teams running it this year. Not so much today with the Raiders, because the Raiders are running single high, but as there's more two high defenses, mm-hmm. this run becomes more available. And it just because where the safety is and the number count for the line, it's just that's what you're going to see more and more and more of it. But how the Bears got to it, Raiders are a single high team. Gus Bradley's a Seahawks kind of guy. They do the little jet motion that kind of blocks the guy without blocking him. Like it's just taking them out of the box count. And run this weak side zone, the running back is able to kind of like make the O-line right.
Exactly right.
And it limits, like you said, that if you have a limited O-line or a limited talent up front, this helps them because they don't all have to win. They more or less, they were going to wad it up basically in the zone blocking. They might not get to the second level. They might not get a great clean block where we all tweet it the next day. Oh, look at Zach Martin. Look at those guys. But they wad it up and the running back cuts back behind it with the linebackers flowing way too hard and they just get north. On Thursday night, I know we're talking about the Bears, but Thursday night, the Rams hit inside zone against the Seahawks like 15 times. Like they just kept doing the same thing. Jamal Adams kept burying himself and they just hit north right behind it. And that's what this does. It's blocking guys with lesser talent and the running backs. And if they're hitting the hole right and they're just getting north and just taking what the defense is giving them, it can lead to a good run game like this. And the best part about it, the best play action concepts come off of weak side zone play action. That's all that hip slot stuff we've talked about. It's faking weak zone. Weak side zone. So you can start seeing where this can all tie in together. And it's good stuff. It really is. And the running backs are running really hard today. It looks good.
Herbert looks really good.
Doesn't he?
I mean, he is useful. And Williams has a lot of juice to him. And I know Montgomery didn't play. And that's why it's impressive they can still sustain this. Yes. What you said is exactly why this is interesting to me. Because it allows you to sustain success on the ground with lesser talent. I thought they did an awesome job climbing to the second level today.
Yep.
But in order to leave those double teams quickly, you need a run scheme that's going to allow your center, who's an undrafted player, who's not going to knock a lot of people around, or whatever he does, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He needs to just be able to get a hand on a guy.
It's a wash.
Wherever he goes, that's right. Because that's in order to do that and get to the second level so quickly, that's what you need. And that's exactly what they had today. And then you combine that with just a few little scattered plays where they create angles. They had Bars. Alex Bars, their sixth offensive lineman, played a ton today. There was a play where he went in motion as an H-back. They didn't change the strength of the defense. They sent Mooney back in motion the other way in jet motion, ran the nickel out. They had numbers to that side. They caved the left side down. Williams comes around. That's just good football. And that's just the type of angles and numbers in the run game that they don't typically create or didn't typically create when they didn't have this, we're going to line up and run the ball aspect to their offense. That's not the most important thing to have as an NFL offense in 2021, but when you need to insulate your quarterback and when you need to just manufacture offense, this is a good way to do it. And they did a couple different times. That Daniels got to the second level several different times today and just was crushing people. I mean, the linebacker jumped in the air at one point and he finished him like a wrestling finishing move, and that was like the highlight play. But there were plenty of other quieter plays. Also, Jason Peters has been really good in the run game.
He had a great game today. He looked really
good. There was a play
good.
Where they ran a delayed handoff. He threw the defensive end by and then made a block on the corner. He blocked two guys on one play.
He turned around, right? Yes. Then he like loop around and got a second guy, right? Yep.
He's had some very publicly bad moments, but he's been really good in the run game. He's made like splashy plays in the run game multiple times this year. And like you said, the backside tight end is a huge part of this. Cole Kmet, several different times today, making big blocks on the backside. They cut it back. And these aren't monster gains. These are 7-yard gains. But when you can consistently do this and score two touchdowns based on essentially just your running game and your defense doesn't let any points up, that's the method for this team. We're going to take shots all play action. We're going to run the ball and we're going to play defense. And I thought that the running game, again, it's not the greatest, most gaudy numbers in the world, but the little things they did today, it's exactly what you said. They are creating this running game to win with lesser talent today, both at running back and along the offensive line, and it worked for them. Yep. All right. Last thing we got today, we got to decide who's got the belt.
You know what happens when you interrupt Chris Jericho? You know what happens, Daffy, Drifter, Dandy? You just made the list!
Finally got Jericho. That's awesome.
It's going to be fun every single week. All right, every week we're going to pick the guy that was just a little cut above, that was the guy that week in the NFL. I think we got to give out a tag team champion this week.
I think
we're going to give it to Brandon Staley and Justin Herbert, because Herbert made the throws, but Brandon Staley made the decisions. I think that you have to reward a guy for every single time the Chargers went for it on fourth down, all the different times he gave his team a chance to win today. And it happened a bunch of different times, and Justin Herbert took advantage of it. They owned today because that was a pretty big win.
Yeah. The Browns are a good team. The Chargers just made a good team. And that's why it's easy to give these guys the belt, is we sometimes maybe over-exaggerate, like, oh, man, that one decision by the coach just won them the game. But it truly was. Like, in a game like this, that was a true barn burner, a true haymaker for haymaker type game. You have to create points somehow. Turnovers, or the coach is doing something like this and being aggressive, or is it a fake punt, or is it going for it on fourth down? Like, there's just ways to do it that the coach can affect the game. Brandon Staley affected the game without playing in between the lines. He affected the game in a positive way for his team. It also helps when you have a quarterback like number 10, who is honestly, you mentioned it before. It's like obviously one of the better quarterbacks, but it's like he every week, I feel like he just passes another guy, like as far as how I look at him in the league. And it's sometimes the stats aren't there, but what he does every single play, the stats were there today, but what he does every single play is just good quarterback play. He's a freak of nature, but he's got a sharp brain, which is like, he plays like a 10-year vet at times, and he's in his second year and he's started, you know, like 18 games, 20 games, you know, it's ridiculous. And on top of that, he could also throw it 70 yards flat footed and then also scramble and outrun angles in the red zone. Like, yeah, just normal stuff that every quarterback can do, but they're the tag team champs this week. They were a phenomenal performance from the Chargers.
I believe I got him sixth in our quarterbacks of the future draft that we did this spring. I'm pretty sure I got him sixth on a rookie contract for the next 2 years. My
Dak
team might be looking
Dak's
okay.
Doing okay.
Dak's doing okay, but yeah. I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good about my rookie quarterback, my rookie contract, Justin Herbert, that I get for three more years on his rookie deal.
Great.
This is what we'd hope for. I mean, and that team is fun. I think the Browns are going to be fun. It was a good day for the non-chief contenders in the AFC. I mean, it was one of those days where they reminded us who they were. And these are the teams that we expected to be really good at the beginning of the year. And they look really damn good. Buffalo, Cleveland, the Chargers. Yeah. It's going to be a fun last two-thirds of the season. That's for sure. All right. If you guys are listening tomorrow on Monday before 1 p.m. Eastern, please get your questions in for the mailbag. Ted Nguyen is going to be joining us. We'll be doing as many of your questions as we can get to. The number for the voicemail, I encourage you guys to leave one, is 872-222-7073. One more time, it's 872-222-7073. The email is athleticfootballshow@gmail.com. Also, please listen to our fantasy shows, Best on the Board and the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. With that, I'm going to get some sleep. Wearing down here. It's 1:20 in the morning.
We did.
Appreciate everyone who stuck around for this. If you guys didn't, that's okay. We still love you. Appreciate you guys listening. Please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. Really appreciate that. Please subscribe to The Athletic. It's theathletic.com/football show. I promise you will not regret it. It's great stuff every single day. Everything you need to recap what was a wild week 5 in the NFL. I think it was week 5. We're on hour 16 here. You should go check it out at The Athletic.
At least we know we could do a 24-hour marathon. Like, it was just like for charity or something like that. It's like, we might be in the cards. This is our training.
It's good. It was a long day. It was a fun day. Appreciate you, buddy. Appreciate you guys for sticking around. Everyone that stayed up, the 7 of you that are still around. Thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you guys soon.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
Hey, hey!
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.